She couldn't free her fingers from the grip. It had melted round them. Her throat voiced a desolate cry as the terrible fire bit hard into her knuckles. The flaming remnants of the carbine fell to the ground. She held up her hand. There were no fingers or thumb, only the smoking stump of her palm. Her cry turned to a wail, and she tripped over a root protruding from the loam. The woody strand coiled fluidly round her ankle like a malicious serpent. Four dark figures loomed closer, a fifth lumbering up behind. She twisted round on the ground. The space plane was 12 meters away. Gerald Skibber was lying on the floor of the airlock, with two suited figures on top of him, pinning him down. He looked straight at Jenny, a gleeful sneer on his bloodied lips. The root tightened its vice-like grip, cutting into her ankle. He was doing it. She knew that then. "Lift," she datavised. "Ralph, for God's sake, lift. Get him to Ombe. Jenny, make it mean something." One of the dark figures landed on her. It was a man, strangely corpulent, bulky without being fat. Thick matted hair covered his entire body. Then she couldn't see anything. His belly was pressed against her shell helmet. That quiet chorus spoke to her again. "There is no need for fear," it said. "Let us help you." Another of the man-things gripped her knees, his buttocks squashing her damaged legs into the ground. The front of her anti-projectile suit was ripped open. It was difficult to breathe now. "Jenny! Oh, Christ, I can't shoot! They're on top of her!" "Lift!" she begged. "Just lift!" All the neural nanonics analgesic blocks seemed to have collapsed. The pain from her legs and hands was debilitating, crushing her thoughts. More ripping sounds penetrated her dimming universe. She felt hot, damp air gust across her bare crotch. "We can stop it," the chorus told her. "We can save you. Let us in." There was a pressure against her thoughts, like a warm, dry wind blowing through her skull. "Go to hell," she moaned. She sent one final diamond-hard thought needling into her faltering neural mnemonics, a kamikaze code. The order was transferred into the high-density power cell, shorting it out. She wondered if there would be enough energy left for an explosion big enough to engulf all the man-things. There was. The Equin fell around Lalonde's equator, 600 kilometers above the brown and ochre streaks of the deserts which littered the continent of Sarrow. With its 5 windmill-sail thermodump panels extended from its central section, the colonist carrier was rotating slowly about its drive axis, completing one revolution every 20 minutes. A passenger McBoeing BDA-9008 was docked to an airlock tube on its forward hull. It was a tranquil scene, starship and space plane sliding silently over Sarrel's rocky shores and out across the deepening blues of the ocean. Thousands of kilometers ahead, the Terminator cast a black veil over half of Amarisk. Every few minutes a puff of smoky yellow vapor would flash out of a vernier nozzle between the starship's thermodump panels, gone in an eye-blink. Such nonchalant technological prowess created an effect which totally belied the spectacle inside the airlock tube, where children cried and threw up, and red-faced parents cursed as they fended off the obnoxious sticky globules. Nobody had been given time to prepare for the departure. All they had brought with them was clothes and valuable items stuffed hastily into shoulder bags. Children hadn't even been given anti-nausea drugs. The embassy staffers shouted back and forth in angry tones, disguising both relief at leaving Lalonde and disgust at the flying vomit. But the Equan's crew were used to the behavior of planet dwellers. They floated around with handheld suction sanitizers and cajoled the reluctant children towards one of the 5 big zero-tau compartments. Captain Farah Montgomery watched the picture projected from an AV pillar on the bridge command console, indifferent to the suffering. She'd seen it all before, 1,000 times over. "Are you going to tell me where we are heading?" she asked the man strapped into her executive officer's acceleration couch. "I can start plotting our course vector. Might save some time." "Ombe," said Sir Asquith Parrish, Kulu's ambassador, to Lalonde. "You're the boss," she said acidly.